Okay. I love that kind of a welcome. All right. Wow. How are you all today? So I thought I'd read the energy right. Okay. I am delighted to be here. It's been a few years since I was here last and spoke, and you're an amazing group, and I had an opportunity. We're being hosted, my wife and I, by Carol Jackson and Bruce Kingsley in their lovely home, and we just met with some of the board and some of the other leadership of this church, and I just got a real taste of the powerful dynamic of this ministry. It is really growing, and the energy of love and acceptance and warmth and oneness is just something to behold. So congratulations to you, because you all create that energy. It's a wonderful thing to come into, and it will continue to attract and draw people because it really is a coming home to the energy of what we all are, interconnected in one. So so happy to be here. And, you know, yeah, I've accomplished some stuff, but sometimes behind every man that seems to have, you know, done good, there is a powerful woman that's rolling her eyes. My wife Diane has been at my side all those years, and powerful. Please, Diane. I also would just really like to thank Leah McCarn, or our administrator. She's worked with me and supported me in bringing her. She says, the delight. You are very blessed to have her. And I am happy to say that we have a special guest. No, we don't. Okay. I'm told that the person hasn't arrived, and maybe they will later. Okay. So I got the wrong signal there. Maybe it's me, special guest. So, you know, we all know that life is full of changes, right? And I've been a pulpit minister for 41 years, 7 years in Olympia, Washington, and then 34, as Michael mentioned, in Unity of Houston. And they're all wonderful. You meet people from all walks of life, and they're all children of God, and they're all beautiful and magnificent, and they're all seeking and searching to be that, you know, find their way and their path. And life is changing. This world is changing. Ministry can be changing. Our bodies are changing. I've noticed that. But, you know, it reminds me of the story of the two guys that were really good friends, and they met for lunch once a year, and one of them was out of town a couple hours drive, so he would drive in. They had a pact. At least once a year they would do that. And so they always went to a new restaurant, and so this time, after a number of, you know, times of gathering together for lunch, they met at this restaurant, and they went in, they sat down, and they were kind of beat the crowd, and there's a little couple of people in other tables, and they were sitting there for a few minutes, and the one guy looked up and said to his friend across the table, he says, you know, there are two old guys sitting just a table behind you, and that's what we're going to look like in 10 years. And his friend turned around and looked, and he said, that's us, that's a mirror. So the world in the external is always changing, isn't it? And so we're always dealing and adapting with that. But what's about the interior? The interior is where our focus needs to be, really, you know, because the outer is going to change, but the interior is really who we are, and finding that is important. My talk today is clarity on our mission. Clarity on our mission. We all have, as spiritual beings, a mission. We're here, you know, and that's the term I use. It's your purpose and meaning and so forth. But there's no avoiding this, you know. It's something that we are here to be about. And it basically, it's said in numerous ways, but essentially is we're here to learn, to grow, and to evolve as spiritual beings. And, you know, some of you know I have studied in India. I went to the Oneness University, and I did that for 9 consecutive years. And I studied there anywhere from 7 days to a full month of 30 days. I was initiated one time being in total, absolute darkness. Couldn't even see my hand for 5 days and five nights. They just brought water in and a bowl of vegetables, which I couldn't even see, but just ate from them. But it was a powerful, powerful experience. So we don't all need to do that. aren't you glad? But any event, I'm just saying, you know, there are different ways and opportunities to keep deepening ourselves and to keep learning and growing, and we find our paths. And while I was there, you know, there were many things they emphasized, and it was very compatible to unity. And one of the things they said is that there are three basic things that are part of our mission in this life, and our purpose, whichever you choose. And they said, basically, number one is to learn, to grow, and to evolve spiritually. Number two is to be used by God, to serve, to help, out of a sense of we're all one. And ultimately, they said, third is the ultimate, and that is to be about oneness. It is to know that you are connected and at one with everyone and everything. It's all alive. It's one energy. It's one intelligence. And to begin to awaken to that awareness. And with that, to attune to your absolute true identity. And to begin to live from that. And that true identity is a sense of being connected to everyone, in love with life and people. These are things we know, but they are things that we are growing into. You know, we travel a path from, you know, lower states to higher states. And it's said in various ways, you know. It's, you know, moving from darkness to light. It's moving from ignorance to understanding. It's moving from humanity into our divinity. It's moving from what is false into what is the truth, from the unreal into the real, from the limited into the unlimited, from the temporal into the eternal, from head into heart, from selfishness into selflessness, from separation into oneness, okay? That's the path. You can think of it in other ways to state it, but those are just a few. Jesus taught the single eye of seeing with the single eye of truth. It's not separation. It's not duality. It's not two-ness. It's oneness. And he said that if the eye be single, the whole body shall be full of light. In other words, everything lifts. You are a radiant being. As Jesus said, you are the light of the world. That is truth. That exists. We are light being. And those people who have had mystical experiences and have had tremendous sense, they say it's light. We are light beings. And what takes us into the light is actually the energy of love. They're one and the same. And we'll talk more about that as we go. But Jesus also talked about levels. He recognized there were levels. He said, you are from beneath, I am from above. You are of this world, I am not of this world. And he said also, I am in my Father. And my Father is in me. I love that. I am in my Father, and my Father is in me. Now, we can all say, my Father is in me. I'm a spiritual being. The one source is in me. It's one life. But I can't say necessarily in consciousness, I am in the Father. We're not there yet. We haven't really gotten to the place from lower to higher to awaken to the awareness where we can say, I am in my Father. Jesus said, I and the Father are one. That's what we want to get to, is really a place. It's the path. We have to be patient with ourselves. We have to love ourselves the whole entire way, okay? Because this is a trial and error experience that we're in. So we have inner work to do. You know, we have unfinished business spiritually, all of us. We may have forgiveness work to do. We may have hearts to be touched. We may have amends to be made. We may have issues to be resolved, healing to be done, unfulfilled dreams to attain, just sometimes deepening in our understanding and clarity. So we all have work to do. We all have a mission that we're on. And all of you, I don't know all of you if you've read the book Illusions by Richard Bach, but you know, he said, here's a test to find out whether your mission on Earth is finished. If you're alive, it isn't. Okay. So no, you're here, and that's what you're about. I've studied in recent years near-death experiences, and I've studied the studies on near-death experiences, and some of them have interviewed thousands of people. Elizabeth Kubler-Ross did that, actually. And since the 70s with the book Life After Life by Raymond Moody, which was, I think, came out in 75, that's created a new doorway into awareness and understanding of the spiritual path and truth. that basically people have had been interviewed by the thousands, and the things that they've said, they come with realizations and insights and awarenesses that are so deeply held, and it changes their lives. Some of you have, I know, investigated that and read about that. Anita Moriani is one recent book, Dying to Be Me, a great book to see. But one near-death person who had, flatlined or whatever and came back said this, quote, "I realized there are things every person is sent to earth to realize and learn, like to share more love." Many, many, many said, "It's all about love, folks. You're here to learn love, and we're doing that here." But he continued to say, "We make choices before coming in that gives us the greatest opportunities to learn and accomplish our soul's growth." Y'all believe that? I do, and it's not just said by this one, but by many. Another said, quote, "What we don't complete remains like dishes stacked in the sink. We have to return and clean up." That's a nice thought, but, but I thought I would share it. That's the reality. We have a mission, and we have work to do, and we can't look the other way. So we have to be, genuine and sincere and really go to the depth. There are things we know and there are things we don't know. There are things that we think we know, but we really don't know. They are beliefs and opinions and concepts and so forth. They don't have certainty for sure with us. We have to admit there are things that remain a mystery in this life. We don't know everything. We don't understand everything. Even Jesus said, "There are things I have not yet to share with you. You're not ready," he said it in various ways. So I've been intrigued with survival stories where, certain people survive situations miraculously. Maybe one person survives and many others do not. And we may ask, why is that? And we may say, is that consciousness? And I don't think so. It's not that simple. There are many factors that go in. And I remember when I was in ministerial school in the 70s. That's a long time ago, I know. But I was back at Unity World Headquarters. I was in the ministerial program there, and we had a wonderful faculty. But there was a man, some of you here may even remember, Bob Sicking. Bob Sicking was the director of the Association of Unity Churches. He ran all of and was back there as the director. He had been a Unity minister, but he wasn't on the faculty. And one day, the faculty invited him to speak to our student body. And he shared some personal experiences that he had had in his life. And he was talking about consciousness, what it is, what it isn't, mystery, that kind of thing. And he said one day, he was talking about his experience, an experience or two from being in the infantry in World War II. And he said one day that he was walking with in line with the men in his company, and they were in, kind of close line, and he said the enemy began shooting mortar shells. And he said they all hit the dirt immediately. And he said one shell, mortar shell, landed in the back of the man ahead of him. And it killed him, and it killed the man ahead of that man. And he said, he had hit the dirt, and he said the shell sheared off a 6-inch diameter tree that he had landed next to. And he said the force of the shell sheared off his helmet, his backpack, his shirt, his pants, the elastic on his underwear, the backs of his boots. It completely shaved him, he said. But he was unharmed. He said, "I didn't even have a cut." Another time, he said he was in the infantry there, and he was in a foxhole, and he had to be there for weeks, and he said he was just, one day just sitting there, sitting down, and all of a sudden a mortar shell came right in between his legs in the sand. He jumped out as fast as it came in. But the point is, he would have died if it hadn't been a dud. And he looked at us, very reflecting, and he asked, "Did his consciousness save him?" And he said, "I was just like any other guy. I wasn't an angel. I was a young guy. I got drunk. I did stuff I'm not proud of. It's a mystery," he said to him. And We must realize that death is not ever a punishment, okay? It's a part of life. It's an experience in life. And what we're here to know is that if we're here, we are to continue to know and integrate what we have learned. That's what he concluded simply, that there are some things you don't know, but you go on, you say, I am here, and now I'm going to continue. There was a depth of an experience that came. There are two realities, really, that we face in this life, or have two main realities. The reality that we create, you know, as within, so without, okay, it's consciousness. And so your reality may not be exactly mine, but it's our reality that we're creating at the level that we're at. Then there's God's reality, which basically transcends where we are at. The reality with a capital R, and that's all we're trying to get to, really, is to bring forth heaven on earth. And with the fact that there are two realities, there are actually two main selves that we have, okay? We have a self that is our true self, our God self, our made in the image and after the likeness self that God created. And then there is the self that we are creating and have created over the top of that with a separate mind, okay? And so life is about just realizing that there is a part of us that's whole, complete, perfect already. And yet we have kind of covered over with it with some things that have to do with programming, conditioning, false ideas, not being in the moment, the past haunting us, a commentary that continues to go on and intrude in our mind and take us out of the moment where God is and truth is experienced. It's so important to be in the moment, to be able to quiet down the mind. That's important. And that's what 5 days and nights in the dark was helping me to do as well, in case you were wondering. But one person who had a near-death experience was quoted to say, you know, he had realized, he said, you know, I found out that we are already what we are trying to attain. We're already it. We don't really. Anita Moriani came back and said, we are, her word, magnificent. There's a magnificence, and she captured that. And she realized that, and we get ourselves and a separate self in the way. You know, the Course in Miracles calls it the split mind, you know. Okay, so we have to begin to quiet that. So our mission is to awaken spiritually, to really embrace this, our true identity, and to begin to be in touch with that and live from it and claim it. That's who we are, not as superior to anyone, but connected to everyone and everything. It's a powerful thing. Carl Jung, the great psychologist, he said there are really basically two stages to life, to summarize, and one is we're, you know, the first stage is we're creating tools to cope and to cope with life psychologically, physically, socially, all of that. And in that, we create personalities, we create identities, we create an ego. And he said the second stage of life is working towards undoing and unlearning the ego. Very simple, okay? I think that may be where we're at. It's where I'm at. There was a person who had a very unique recorded message on his answering machine. And this is how it went when you called this individual. The recording said, hello, this is not an answering machine. This is a questioning machine. The questions are, who are you? What do you want? And if you think these are trivial questions, consider that most people go through their entire lives without finding the answer to either one. Beep. I love that. Most people don't know their true identity or embrace it on a regular basis. Like, that's our curriculum. Above the temple, it said, know thyself, thy self, thy true self. You know, sometimes I think we call God something. You know, something told me I shouldn't do that. but my separate self did it anyway, or whatever, you know, whatever, but something. I came across and found a discussion, you know, that went on. The something we argue with, in other words, there's a part of us that is the voice of spirit, that is this something that speaks, and then we doubt it, we question it, we debate it, and with our minds. And that was reflected kind of in a discussion that went on between a mother had two babies within her that she was going to give birth to, and these two babies were having a discussion, a sort of a debate. They weren't the same, coming from the same level. I don't know who recorded this, but this is how the conversation went. One asked the other, "Do you believe in life after delivery?" And the second replied, "Why, of course not. There has to be..." This little baby said, "Yes, I do believe in it. There has to be something after delivery. Maybe we're here to prepare ourselves for what we will be later." "Nonsense," said the first. "There is no life after delivery. What kind of life would that be?" The second said, "Well, I don't know, but there'll be more light than there is here. Maybe we'll have, be able to walk with our legs and eat with our mouths, and maybe we will have other senses that we can't understand really right now." And the first replied, "That's absurd. Walking is impossible, and eating with our mouths, are you kidding? Ridiculous. The umbilical cord supplies of nutrition and everything we need. The umbilical cord is anyway too short, so it just wouldn't work. It's not logical." And the second insisted, "Well, I think there is something. Maybe it's different than it is here. Maybe we won't need this physical cord anymore." The first one replies, "Nonsense. And besides, if there is life, then why has no one ever come back from there? Delivery is the end of life. There's nothing but darkness, silence, oblivion." The second said, "Well, I don't know about that, but certainly we will meet Mother, and she will take care of us." First baby says, "Mother? Mother? You actually believe in Mother? That's laughable. If Mother exists, where is she now?" The second baby said, "Well, she's all around us. We're surrounded by her. We are of her. It's in her that we live. And without her, this world would not and could not exist." The first says, "Well, I don't see her, so it's only logical she doesn't exist." To which the second replied, "Sometimes when you're in silence and you really focus and you really listen, you can sense her presence. And you can hear her loving voice calling down from above." End of debate. Great metaphor, isn't it? We've been there, inside and outside the moon at times. One part of us knows, the other part doubts, questions. Okay, it's part of trial and error life that we're in. Our mission is to enter the silence. Oh, that wasn't silent. To focus, to really listen, because there's an inner voice. There's an inner voice. There's a spirit of truth. You remember what Jesus said when he was getting ready to go to the crucifixion and apart from his disciples? And he told them, "There is that which will join and be with you, that will share with you and knows all of the truth, all of these teachings. I'll be gone." But the way he said it is found in the Gospel of John. He said it very clearly this way, quote, "The Father will give you another counselor that will abide with you forever, the Spirit of Truth, who the world doesn't receive or know because it cannot see him. But you can know him, for he dwells with you and shall be in you." We all have the voice of truth. It's there. We need to allow it to be given attention and focus and listening and connection. We are birthed into this worldly plane that we think is all real, which we see, and we eat, we sleep, we play, we work, we have babies, we have challenges, all of this. Yet within this experience, as we live it, there is something which knows us and calls us unto itself. in all of the complications and the conditions and the circumstances that we encounter in life, there is that presence, this voice of truth. It's all around us, as the baby said. It calls us to come up higher. Know thyself is so significant and a part of our curriculum. I make a distinction between what we are and who we are. I know we often say it's who and what I, you know, we put it in the same sentence, but it's helpful for me to distinguish between the who and the what. Who we are is often, it's our body, it's our career, it's our job, our car, our house, our checking accounts, our achievements, all of that type of thing. They're a part of life, but they have no permanency. They come and go, okay? The question is not who am I, but what am I? What am I? Well, I am spirit. I am of God. I am eternal. I am powerful. I am unlimited. I am of the image and likeness of God. That's what I am. Okay. A Course in Miracles. Some of you study the Course in Miracles, and that's where Jesus supposedly channeled, messages to us. And he said this out of the Course in Miracles. Quote, "The Holy Spirit answers truly for all time. Hear then the one answer of the Holy Spirit for all questions the ego raises. You are a child of God, a priceless part of his kingdom. And in the kingdom, where you are and what you are is perfectly certain. There is no doubt." End of quote. Pretty powerful, isn't it? I love it. Then you go to the Gospel of Thomas. And the Gospel of Thomas was one of the books that didn't make it into the Bible, wasn't canonized, but is rich with enlightenment and some passages actually from Jesus. And in the Gospel of Thomas, there is a place where Jesus says this, quote, "If you bring forth what is within you, what you bring forth will save you. If you do not bring forth what is within you, not bringing what is within you forth will destroy you." And what he's saying about that is the what of you is so important. If you block off and wall off the true nature of yourself as love, as peace, as joy, as connectedness and oneness, that isolation, the word that was used, will destroy you. It won't be a happy place. Okay? Man's problem is said to be separation, right? It is basically a separation used by the mind. It's when the mind is separated. All problems and separation begin in the mind, okay? It's split off from the truth. The mind's commentary is simply filled with often the past or history. And the past is dead, so there's no life in it. The only place you experience life is in the now moment. And that's the only place that God can speak to you and be experienced, and life surges in is by totally being in the moment, quieting the mind down. Don't let the commentary take you out of the moment. Those are disciplines that are part of learning and so emphasized at the Oneness University where I went. So the way to be fully alive then is to listen to the heart, because the heart speaks in the moment. Listening to your heart is actually listening to God. To be in your heart, you have to be in the moment, okay? The heart is the altar of God. I make a distinction between feelings and emotions, too. I know we speak of all emotions and feelings as feelings. You know, I'm feeling an emotion. But to help, just consider this distinction between an emotion and a feeling. Emotions, they have resistance. Emotions are negative. They come up from the past issues. They are always arise with fear. They include things like anger and guilt and jealousy and all those kinds of things. There's fear in them. There's resistance to life in them. They're triggered by the past. Feelings are a flow. They are triggered by the heart and being in the moment. They're spontaneous. They are the place of all good feelings. Feelings are love and joy and peace. They come from the heart, and the heart is the altar of God. So heart must become king or queen, and mind its servant. I close with a little story about a person. You know, we hear a lot about road rage, okay? So that's one end of the spectrum. And then there's love on the other side of the spectrum, right? Fear is anger and road rage. So consider this. This is a true story. It was back in 1998 that there was a guy on the road. He was coming from his suburb in Maryland and going to work in Washington, D.C., and it was always very busy, a rush hour traffic. And so he observed what took place in some cars ahead of him. And he observed a young lady pull out in her compact car, dart out into the flow of traffic, and right in front of another driver that was ahead of him. And so he saw this, and the driver avoided, just missed this gal by inches, but he was furious. And so as he was driving, he noticed that this guy that was furious followed the lady up to the next light, and there was a red light there. And so the angry driver pulled up behind the lady, leaped from his car, began to stride angrily toward this lady. Clearly, he was going to give her a piece of his mind. And this is at a red light. And she, in the rearview mirror, sees him coming. And this young lady, she's a very attractive lady. And she jumps from her car. She ran to meet him with a big smile on her face. And before the man could say a word or know what was happening, she threw her arms around him, hugged him tightly, planted a big passionate kiss on his lips. And then she abruptly turned, got back in her car, and driving away, left this man standing in the street, speechless, looking somewhat confused, a bit embarrassed, but he was no longer angry. The lady was enlightened. She knew what she was. She was love. And she could have dipped into fear that this guy is going to do, what he's going to say, what is he up to? She stepped into what she was. She would not be denied. She acted spontaneously from the heart in the moment, listened to her higher nature. She was in a flow. She gave this man a lesson in beingness. Love, oneness, casts out all fear. It does. So, folks, we're on a mission, and we're here to learn and to grow and to evolve spiritually. We're here to serve, to be used by God. But the ultimate is oneness, yeah, union with the source and with claiming our true nature in oneness with the source, truly what we are. Let us go forth and become or be the light that we're created to be in the world. God bless you all. So let's take a moment. For us to just really absorb these truths. But first, to just, if you haven't already done so, to gently close your eyes. Quiet the mind. Perhaps focus on the breath, if that helps. And it is the very breath of life, the breath of God. Allow yourself to feel your connection, being attuned to that one source that has given you life, is the life that is everywhere, surrounds you, unfolds you, and simply affirm within, God, God is here, God is here, God is always here. God is always in my here and now. And I step fully into the here and now, right now. I honor the mission that I have been given, the journey that I am on, the classroom of this school called life. I am being called up higher. I am being guided by the one presence and power. I am being shown So I now commit to bow to my true nature, the divine spirit. I vow to listen for the voice of truth, the Holy Spirit, the spirit that takes me into wholeness. I say yes. I say yes to oneness. And as I do, I say one, say yes to life. I'm saying yes to love, to joy, to peace, oneness and truth. And so I am grateful in this moment as I open to listening to my heart, to feeling my connection to all life. I am guided. And so I take a few quiet moments now just to feel my inner connection, to take a stand for the magnificence that I am, that God has created me to be, that I seek now to honor always, moment to moment. And so, dear God, we give thanks. We all let go and let you do your perfect work in and through us. We are grateful for this gift of life, and we go forward seeking to be a light in the world, that which you know us to be. And so it is. Amen.
We all here?